Hello and welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I'm your host, Adam Elmacias, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California for episode number 69 with Jason Richardson. Jason Richardson is currently in the band All That Remains, although I've known him for a long ass time. We toured together on this festival called Soundwave in Australia, and you got to be in a bus with a few different people because it wasn't a bus tour. You like flew from date to date. And then in between, you'd ride on these like big, you know, like a coach bus just to get to your hotel. And it was like of Mice and Men, Chelsea Grin, and this band While She Sleeps. And we all rode together. And I think maybe Motionless and White too. I forget who the last band was, but us three. And so I got to know him around then, but he's jumped around to a few different bands. He's an amazingly very talented guitar player. Absolutely shreds. Actually, on the podcast, first one to do this, he demonstrated, and don't make fun of me, tapping, something like that, Jason. If I got the word wrong, don't judge me. You can forgive me. I'm a photographer and a podcast dude. I'm not a guitar player. Play one song. That's it. Anyway, it was a cool episode. We talked about what it's like navigating the industry as an artist, you know, how you go from band to band, what skills are required, and what things you look for in a group before, you know, kind of signing on with them, like touring with them and becoming part of the band. Unfortunately, due to some pretty sad events, All That Remains guitarist, amazing human, his name was Ollie, passed away within the past few years. And Jason was lucky enough to kind of, you know, try to fill his shoes. Ollie was an incredibly talented guitarist. So it takes, you know, somebody with a lot of talent to try and attempt to fill his shoes. And I think Jason does a pretty good job. So I'm happy that he is in the band All That Remains now. Congrats to that, Jason. You are navigating your career as a guitarist amazingly. In addition to that, Jason has a very successful and interesting kind of YouTube going on where he just shreds. He'll play with his friend Luke Holland. They've actually gone on tour together, opening for Dream Theater. They've done some pretty cool stuff because there's a whole community of guitar psychos. I don't know what to call them. They're just like, their fingers move faster than you can think, and it's insane. So check them out on YouTube. Jason Richardson, of course, as always, we'll have the link in the show notes or the caption, whatever you want to call it. They're there. Click them. Check it out. Jason, I'm impressed. Thank you so much for an hour of your time. It was lovely seeing you last week on set for your music video. Thanks for inviting me out. I appreciate you so much. With that being said, before we get to the podcast, as always, thank you to our new patrons for signing up this week. We got 4 new ones, partly because I missed one last week and partly because we got 3 this week. But we've got EVS. I don't know how to say her name, or Eva. Oh, Eva. We've got Eva, Christian, Ian, and Apollo. Thank you all for signing up. And I got to give a special shout out to my guy, Ian, because he has no intention of going on tour. In fact, he just welcomed his first child into this world. And I know that because Ian is one of my best friends. I got a few of them back in Wisconsin. One of them goes by the name of Ian. And dude, I love you. Thank you so much for supporting me. Your email address is ridiculous. And yeah, I look forward to the next time I get to see you, hang out with you, play some cards with you. I got to get the game Flesh and Blood. It looks awesome. I can't wait to see you. But thank you everybody for supporting the podcast via Patreon. It allows us to keep this ad-free, employ Connor. I don't know how much longer we're going to hold on to him. He's been in LA for a little bit now and he's getting pretty cool. So we're just crossing our fingers that he doesn't give up on us anytime soon. So thank you, Connor, for your hard work every week. Eva, for your article writing. If you haven't checked those articles out, they're on don'tshitonthebus.com. Click articles. She writes one every week. Sometimes it's about what was on the podcast. Sometimes it's about a concept we discuss on the podcast, but check them out. They're good. And yeah, that's all I got for you. So with that being said, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. We're here to educate, entertain, help people get on tour, help people stay on tour. We just want you to have a good time on the road. And of course, don't shit on the bus. All right, I'll see you next week. What's up, Jason? How's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. How about you? Been a long time.
It's been a while. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, you too. You look the exact same. I think it's been like 8 years. Maybe that 2014 Warped Tour.
Yeah, since we saw each other last, it's been a while. We have spoken intermittently, but it's been a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit me up when you first moved out here and then, or to LA area. Are you still in LA?
Yeah, I'm back here. I dipped out for like a year during COVID, but I'm in Valley Village.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I know you're out here. I hopefully we could connect IRL. COVID kind of put a stop to everything.
Yeah, just a little bit, especially out here. It was,
oh my God,
very tight out here. I don't blame you for leaving.
Right? It was like, They really turned it. I mean, I kind of get it. There's a lot of people in a small area here. I get it.
There. Yes. It's quite dense. Yes.
But cool. Thanks for joining me today. I know I've given you a rundown on what the podcast is about. I'm excited to talk with you today and learn from you, because as much as we've hung out and we're familiar, and if we saw each other, we could hang out effortlessly. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever really sat down and been like, so tell me about your guitar playing.
No, not yet. This is the first for us.
This is happening. And also, you kind of look like a vampire. I got like purple lights in your eyes. It's kind of cool.
Oh, I have like one of those like vibey ambient lights like right there. So it kind of gets like a unintentional like duotone kind of happening. But yes, is right now it's purple. I can sometimes it oscillates in like different colors and stuff. But like if I hit the button on it, oh, there we go. Is it changing now?
Yeah. You got yellow, red. Oh, there you look aliver. But I was going to say, if you like compared cycling our videos next to each other, like I'm in like a bright living room kind of vibe and you're like definitely in your creative den.
Yes. I mean, I have other lights and stuff here because it gets kind of like my overhead light is very warm. And like,
yeah.
Like just stock. So I have like actual lights on as well. You can kind of see like the reflection and I get like the curve of fuck. I can't ever point on camera.
It's
because it's all backwards.
Everything's backwards and forwards.
You see which one I'm trying to get to?
I got you. Yeah, I can see your light kind of slowly changing now. This is nice.
Hell yeah.
All right. So I figured we'd start without going like, we don't have to go all the way back, but the thing about you is, or what makes you unique, or rather one of those things, is your level of skill. It's just insane. You know, I did watch a bunch of videos getting ready for this because I was like, all right, I've seen Jason live, but what is he even cooking up solo? And I mean, prior to joining your first band, what was your home environment like to achieve this level of skill? Or, you know, and I think you joined your first band at 18. Is that wrong? Or at least the first band on Wikipedia?
First touring band was I was 17.
Okay.
And I dropped out of high school and went on tour. I think it was like I had scholarship to Berkeley and I ended up just bailing on that just because I wanted to be in a band and go on tour. That was pretty much the goal. So yeah. I was able to just essentially in my head, just completely bypass that step. And now we're like 12 years later or 13-ish now, yeah. I think the math is hard, but it seems to have worked out fine. So I'm just going to keep rolling with it. That was All Shall Perish was the name of that band. I just sent them they needed a new lead guitar player. So I sent them a video, learned some songs and not even expecting an email back. And I had one like the next morning, like less than 12 hours after I sent in the video. It was pretty crazy.
All Shall Perish is like an East Coast band and you're from Virginia. Is that correct?
No, they are were Oakland based.
Excuse me. West Coast. Yeah. All yes. Shall I meant to say, look how far apart you are. I didn't mean to say, look, mm-hmm. you live close together.
Yeah.
So how did that work? You got accepted to the band and you're like, all right, I'm not going to Berkeley and I'm going across the country.
Yes. Well, my dad came with me for like the first practice and all, cause I was still a minor and shit like that. Like, we had to get a like notarized, what is it called? So it's some sort of legal document that says that I'm allowed to like be with them because, but I'm still a minor. I can't remember exactly what it was.
So they're your legal guardian or something like that.
Like
or
powers of I don't remember the exact terminology for it, but we had to get a notarized document just as like, just in case anything unforeseeable could have happened while I'm out there until I was 18. But yeah, but my dad's a musician too. So he was awesome. Like totally on board. I was supposed to finish high school and get my GED. One of the guys in the band was actually a pretty significant math tutor off tour, oddly enough. So it seemed like it was going to like work, but it just didn't. We tried once on one of the van rides and it was just like, is not a thing.
So you tried to focus and learn math while you're on the road with the intention of graduating high school?
Yes. And getting my GED at least. And it did not work out. There's just too many distractions. Just like,
I can't imagine
being in a van. Like I was just like, I wouldn't literally want to do anything else but this right now. So it just never happened. Dave Grohl doesn't have a GED. I don't think.
Yeah. If it worked for him. Yeah. Hey, but you got a full scholarship to Berkeley and you didn't use it. That's almost more of a flex than going.
It wasn't full. It was partial, but like
I stand anything, corrected.
Yeah, it was. I mean, full would have been cool. I still wouldn't have gone, but it was just a partial one. But that place is really expensive. So like literally anything helps. I can't remember exactly how much it was. It was anywhere from like $6,000 to $10,000 a semester or something like that, I think.
That's great. Well, congrats on getting that, even if you didn't use it. I mean, your dad's a musician too. So were you just, before joining this band, were you doing music at school, doing music at home? Like what was your vibe?
Yeah, my whole intent to join All Shall Perish was to get promotion for my local band that I was in.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting to like full blown join. And obviously, you know, 17, dropping out of high school, I had no education whatsoever with the music business, like actually like doing it and stuff like that. So you learn pretty quick that like, that's not exactly going to go how it's planned in your head. Cause I was literally thinking like, I'd be up there and everybody would be like, oh my God, that's the guitar player from Gallows Hill, my local band's name. And, but that's not what they're thinking at all. They're everyone in the crowd is saying, oh man, that new guitar player for All Shall Perish is really sick. And they have no clue who my local band was at all, like none. So after I figured that out, I ended up like, you know, had to stop doing that band just because it just didn't make any sense. I was really like, there are a couple of us that really wanted it, like, you know, like to really make it happen. But if you, not everyone is as driven as you, like, it always ends up, unfortunately, not working out. But the bass player in that band, he's been in Vela Maya for like 10 years now. I helped get him into that band. So we've both been out like touring and doing all that stuff like that this entire time now.
And that's great. And Eddie is now in Suicide Silence, right? Wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I would love to see you play Wage Slaves live. That would be like amazing. I just love that song. Yeah, I just love that song.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, I still remember not the whole song. I remember that riff for sure. Like the riff, the cowbell riff. I haven't heard that forever. Damn. That whole album was so sick. Price of Existence. Yeah. I think the first one I heard was Awaken the Dreamers. That was the one that really like informed me of the band.
Yeah.
And that was like, I think that was album cycle where I joined.
So before joining that band, I know you're in a local band in your area, but it sounds like you're pretty involved in the music scene. I mean, you discovered a relatively small band in the big picture of things on your coast, but pretty big in that world.
Mm-hmm.
When you joined that band, were you like, I made it? I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I was like, this is it. Like, yeah. I mean, in retrospect, I mean, it definitely was like, I mean, it was bigger than anything I had ever done. Like, this was back when MySpace was popping off. So it's like literally like millions of plays on their page and all of that stuff. I remember showing all my friends the email that I got like on my old like Verizon flip phone with the physical keypad. It was one of like the longer ones, and flip it and it had the physical keypad underneath.
Not a Sidekick, but the one that slides up, you know, is that what you're saying?
No, it wasn't the one that slides up. It was like an actual like a book one.
Like a notebook. Like okay. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
So it would flip up like that and had the physical keypad underneath. I wanted like a Sidekick or what's the one that swiveled?
That's a Sidekick.
That's a Sidekick. The one that was like,
yeah, like flips. Yeah.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. It was like the Razor days is when this was happening. If you remember how cool those were with T9 and all of that shit.
Oh yeah. Throwback. Yeah. I mean, congrats on getting in your first band at such a young age. That must've felt amazing. When did you start playing guitar?
I started taking it seriously when I was 12.
I mean, like 5 years of doing the thing and then, you know, coming up with not an idea, but being like, I want to be in a band that's big, that tours nationally, and then doing it by the time you're 17. Were you, what was in your mind at that time? Were you like, all right, I'm going to retire soon?
No, not even close. Still not even close to there yet. but I mean, I definitely... thinking back, like everything that I've learned, like, you know, since then, I'm 30 now. So I was 17 then. So like, I definitely had a little bit of an ego for sure, which fortunately I would like to think got squashed relatively quickly. But I just know, like thinking back at some of the things I did before I like had learned a lot from just touring and like etiquette and all of that kind of shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I definitely could have done things a little bit differently, but I like to think I definitely learned from that, and I'm not going to do any dumb rude shit like that again. Just like touring etiquette stuff that you have to just learn by doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that is, you've definitely hammered out the goal of this podcast, is to hopefully get people on the road and have them skip some of the embarrassing steps that you have to learn on the road, and just make the mistakes that are necessary and not the shitting on the bus level of mistakes.
Yep. But fortunately, I don't think I've done that. There have been some unfortunate like food poisoning instances where I've definitely puked in the toilet on the bus.
But that's okay. That happens. That's, I mean, like extenuating circuits. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still solids though, which sucks. Because that's the whole point, is like, it can't be solids in the tank on the bus.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
The problems.
But you weren't being lazy. It was out of necessity. You've hot bagged?
Yes. 100% have hot bagged it. I mean, you do what you got to do, man. You wake up like some food poisoning or sickness thing, and you're just like, wow, something's eating me from the inside, and you just have to do what you got to do. I feel like most people that have toured like have been there at least once. Unfortunately, it's not the preferred thing, but what, can't shit on the bus.
I don't know if you've ever had the moment where you've brought somebody to the show as a guest and you're like, here's our bus. And you know, you obviously usually have to tell them you can't poop on it. And if you've brought your parents or something, like, well, what do you do?
I tell everyone. I think it's funny. Yeah. Usually there's signs too.
Yeah.
Yeah. People's usual response, at least my mom's response, was like, well, what, like genuine concern, like, where do you go? But you're on here all night. Like, they just don't understand. Like, you just don't get to do it at night.
Yeah. Unless you got a hot bag it.
I mean, I feel like there's a few different routes that people take to get in a band. This one, you emailed them, but usually it's something like, I was friends with them, or a combination of you're very skilled and friends with somebody, and you get into the band. After you were in All Shall Perish, I know you moved on to Born of Osiris and a few other artists, but going from that first band to the second band, was it a lot easier to kind of acquire that role now that you had proof of concept, or what was it like navigating the industry?
The transition from ASP to Boo was essentially what had happened. So we were doing a co-headline tour together while I was still in All Shall Perish. And Tosin Abasi was actually, from Animals as Leaders, was playing guitar for Born of Osiris at the time. Mm-hmm. And Born of Osiris already had a tour lined up later that year after the current tour that we were on together. And Animals as Leaders got their very first tour ever, which I think was Between the Buried and Me, Veil of Maya, and Animals as Leaders opening. And this was like 2009 or 10. Mm-hmm. No, 2009. This was 2009, I think. They found out that the tour was happening from like Lamb Goat or something. And then Tosin told them later. So they needed a guitar player for that tour. And All Shall Perish had time off. So okay. I was like, well, you guys are my favorite band at the time. I was like, I'll do it. Like, of course, like I love your guys' shit. Of course I'll come play on this tour. And I think that tour was, I believe it was Hatebreed headlining, Cannibal Corpse, Direct Support, Unearth, Born of Osiris, and then Hate Eternal opening.
What a lineup.
Yeah, it was pretty
intense. It's a lot of screaming.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense tour. Yeah, that was like almost 2 months, I think. It was a long one. Like it went up in like Edmonton and Alberta and like all that kind of stuff.
Full North America.
Yeah, in December.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where like you walk outside, it's just pins and needles because it's like -20 degrees Fahrenheit.
Were you guys in a van?
Yes.
Oh my God. It was a rough one, I'm sure.
I remember like waking up once and it was just like, there's like a whiteout and you're going like 5 miles an hour. I think Cannibal Corpse barely made one show because they were having to drive like 5 miles an hour because you couldn't see like more than like a foot or two in front of you.
That shit is scary.
Yeah.
Luckily, I believe I know them as Rosecrans before Born of Osiris. I think they're from the Midwest, so they're probably pretty good at driving in the snow.
Yeah, when you're sober, but yeah.
Noted.
It was kind of wild. As the reason I ended up getting kicked out is because I would complain about all the partying and shit like that. But we won't go into too much details, but that's pretty much essentially what happened. Was I wasn't into that stuff. I was vocal about my opinion of it and they got sick of it. So they kicked me out. And then I joined Chelsea Grin. It's less than like 24 hours after that.
And I think like without going into detail on that, we can acknowledge that just disagreeing with a group of people or being in the minority is probably fuel enough for you to find something else in life. Because what's it like, you know, being on the road and not feeling at home, I guess you would say? Like, what is that feeling like?
It was one of those things where like at first you could kind of like shrug it off for a while. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you're just like, whatever. Maybe hopefully it gets better. But then it just doesn't. And then just crazier shit starts happening. And then eventually I started like kind of like alienating myself almost a little bit. Like I would like, just like, I remember on the last tour, I think like one of the only things I really did was, other than like, you know, play the shows and like travel in the van and stuff like that, I would just like hide myself in my laptop playing Skyrim for the most part. Okay. Honestly, I think if I remember correctly, it was a while ago now. It was like 10, it was a decade or 11 years ago now. But
that's crazy.
That last tour, I was literally just like pretty much only playing Skyrim, just like away from everyone for the most part, besides the shows and stuff. And then, and then that was it. They were just like, all right, we're over it. And I was like, damn, that sucks. But in hindsight, it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me career-wise.
It kind of forced you, and I'm sure you learned so much, and it gave you tools to identify in the future should something arise of that sort. You're like, oh, this doesn't work for me. I know to move on to another project and not, you know, intentionally waste your time, I guess.
Exactly. Yep. It was definitely a good learning experience, that's for sure. And then transitioning over into Chelsea Grin, we were essentially what happened there was one of the guitar players, Dan, he lived next to Born Over Cyrus guys in the Chicago area. We were in Wheaton in Naperville at the time, which is like, you know, no one actually, like when they say live in the Chicago, they mean suburb somewhere.
Yeah.
Rarely ever like I'm right from in the city. Yeah. So that's where we were. So Dan was in Naperville. We were in Wheaton. And so we would hang out like all the time since we live so close to each other. He started taking like a few guitar lessons from me. And then their guitar player quit due to some very sad circumstances without getting into, I don't want to air too much of that out because I don't know if it's on the internet.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or not. But
we like to be appropriate.
Yeah, but some very sad circumstances happened with him and he quit. So essentially I called Dan to vent about getting kicked out of Boo. I just jokingly said, well, why don't you just let me join your band? Because he had just gotten the other dude to just quit. And then Dan was like, let me call you back.
And you're then, like, what did I just do? Back.
He called everyone. He called their management, everyone in the band. And then like 4 hours later, I was going to Europe with them in 2 weeks on their next tour. And I think that was, Asking Alexandria headlining, Bless the Fall and Chelsea Grin. And that was like a pretty long Europe tour.
You have not had any transition in life that sounds slow and steady. It sounds like it's like, all right, we're on to the next thing now.
Yeah, at that point, no. I mean, that was fine, like, for me back then, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's what I wanted to be doing was out touring and stuff like that. So it was, I mean, it was definitely sick. It was fun. And then I stayed with them for, I think, almost 4 years, I think it was. We put out an EP and an album together, Evolve EP, and then the album Ashes to Ashes. It was a fun outlet while I was in it, but it got to a point where, like, I mean, when I joined the band, they had already had, like, 2 or 3 albums out at that point. So they had, you know, like a sound that the fan base loved. And that's why they had gotten to where they were is because of the way that they sounded. And that's, you know, way more, not to talk shit by any means at all, but it's a much more kind of like simple, straightforward kind of metal, like just like really, really heavy type stuff. So it was fun while I was in it. The shows were always really fun. Getting to see people go crazy during the breakdowns and all that stuff was awesome. But it just got to a point where I was just having to like intentionally write like stuff that wasn't at like the peak of like my ability or stuff that I actually wanted to be doing.
You outgrew it.
Yeah. Not just catering to like the specific Chelsea Grin fan base. So I wrote after the first album that I was on, Ashes to Ashes, came out, the song that's on my first solo album entitled Retrograde that has Spencer from Periphery on it. I wrote that one back then while I was still in the band, the first version of it. And I sent that one to them. I was like, yo, like, check this out. And I had intentionally left a couple parts out in my head because I knew it would be considered like too crazy.
You had to tone it down a little bit.
Yeah. And they still said even my definition of a toned down version was still too much. And that was kind of like mentally for me in my head, that was kind of like the straw on the camel's back where I realized I was like, I don't think I can keep like doing this in this outlet. Nothing to do with any of the guys personally at all. We're all still friends. We all still hang out and talk. So that one was definitely an amicable, like, think we kind of need to like separate now. Yeah. I just like, this isn't the outlet that I can be writing the type of stuff like full blown that I know I want to be doing. So,
and it sounds like you were touring with them and you were kind of achieving, maybe you were okay with, or it wasn't a priority to write bigger and better stuff because you were achieving all these firsts anyway, right? I know you went toured around the world with them. You probably did all these things with them that maybe you didn't have a chance to do with your past two projects. Is that correct? Or
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, I did. We did All Shall Perish and Born Osiris. I went to Europe with both of them, but with Chelsea Grin, we did a bunch of the like.
I saw you at Soundwave.
Yeah, we did Soundwave. You were there.
Yeah.
We went to Australia. We did some of the like Southeast Asian islands. We did Hong Kong. I know we went to like Vietnam and stuff, like a handful of other stuff all in that one run. So yeah, I didn't get to do any of that with Born Over Cyrus or All Shall Perish, that's for sure. And actually the only time I've been to Japan was with my solo project. So that's sick.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. We opened for Polyphia out there.
I mean, so you're in Chelsea Grin and you write your first solo record kind of during your ending time with them. And like you said, you're taking pieces that, you know, won't fit there. Mold, but they'll work for you. At what point did you decide, okay, I need to kind of start to focus on what I want to do? And I mean, kind of scary. I don't know. You're going from like the secure band to kind of starting all over in a way.
It was a huge risk, which is why I just wrote out my lease out in Salt Lake area because that's where Chelsea Grin was from. So
okay,
I finished out my lease that I had at my apartment there. And then, because I had no idea what was going to happen financially making this move, like none whatsoever. But I crowdfunded the album via Indiegogo and it ended up raising like 33 grand.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. It was like a 13K more than my goal. I think I set the goal at like 20 for the album and it like more than, it didn't it didn't double, but it did well over what I was
expecting. Yeah, that's insane.
Like I say, my dad's a musician. My parents are very supportive. So just to ride out the transition financially, you know, see what happens with the album and all of that kind of stuff. I moved back home with them for a couple of years until I could, you know, tell it was definitely going to work. And then
kind of gather everything together, figure out your plan.
Yep. And then I started dating my girlfriend and I had moved out here. And Luke, the drummer that I play with, had also moved out here. So I was like, it just makes sense. Like I'm doing fine financially. I'm sick of being in my parents' basement. My girlfriend lives there. The drummer that I play with lives there. And it was like, I know there's a million more opportunities for me out there musically than living in Northern Virginia. So I was like, I'm just going to do it. Like, fuck it. I'm just going to do it. And then I've been out here since 2018.
That's why. Yeah. Do you finally not feel at home, but you went through all these journeys, which are necessary. There's nothing wrong with that. And you kind of found these little things that didn't quite fit. Did everything finally feel like it came together when you just started focusing on doing Jason Richardson and doing your own thing?
Yep, 100%. It worked better than I could have ever predicted. Like, that's honestly when, like, especially like financially, like things started really kicking up. Like, because I mean, I went from just being in the band, like, you know, having to split things anywhere from like 4 to 6 ways after tours or anything, anything that had to do with the band at all. Like, there, you know, you had to split it like quite a few ways. So it went from that to me being in the like control of like everything and then figuring out transcription, like guitar transcriptions and like how to sell those and all of that kind of stuff. And that's when just everything started really picking up and just gotten like a way better spot personally, for sure.
Yeah, it's a huge difference to go from splitting something 6. I mean, you could in theory be 1/6 the size and make the exact same amount.
Yeah.
I mean, were there anybody or any other people you saw doing solo careers that inspired you to move towards that direction? I know you use YouTube, but is there anybody that was on YouTube or what?
No, I don't think so. I just knew that it's just something that I just knew that that's what I wanted to do and try. I mean, Luke and I, we had discussed doing it, but then we never expected it to take off like it did. Like we thought we were just going to have a sick album, but then like everyone just started paying way more attention than we thought they would. And we were like, all right, I guess we kind of have something going on here. Maybe we should actually like really try and pursue this. Yeah. And then we ended up we did a few tours. Like I said, we did that Japan show. We did right before all the stuff with COVID hit the fan, we did a European tour with Dream Theater. Yeah, that was the shows were great, but logistic wise, like I remember we were talking about all of that stuff. It's just like, I think we had 29 days to get everything put together from like being solidified to the first show. So like putting together an entire European tour in less than a month is quite stressful. And there was had to deal with a little bit of it out there while we were just, you know, traveling around and shit like that.
What'd you have to deal with? Or you mean like the logistics, you were still finishing it up while you were out there? Is that what you're saying?
Kind of in a way, I guess. I mean, I remember I had to specifically tell our tour manager to get hotels with air conditioning because it was like summer. And in Europe, there's like, they don't believe in air conditioning in half the places. So
or ice.
Like, I had to like literally specifically say, I was like, you're not booking one more hotel on this tour that doesn't have air conditioning. Like, you can call me like a jaded dumb American as much as you want. Like, I want to be able to fucking sleep and not just roll around in my sweat, just like being pissed off.
Well, in a way, were you kind of getting used to? I mean, you know, you had a tour manager. What was your crew like, even though there was just two of you guys playing? How many people were you traveling with over there?
I think we had 4, actually.
4 total, including you or in addition to?
In addition. So 6 total.
Okay.
It kind of varied a little bit at the beginning just because, like I said, everything was so last second. Like, fortunately, I've befriended and I'm friends with literally all of the Dream Theater guys now and their crew.
Oh, awesome.
For the most part, they have a few crew guys that are like always there no matter what. Like they're on retainer and stuff like that. So
okay.
My usual guitar tech that I always have, his name's Eddie. And he was already over in Europe, fortunately, with a different band. But it didn't finish until like 3 or 4 days into our tour started. So like I hit up Maddie, Petrucci's guitar tech, before it started. I was like, yo, I have a guy coming out, but all of this shit is so last second. Could you possibly, you know, fill in for him for just like a few days until he gets there on the tour? Because, you know, we were we were always playing before Dream Theater, obviously. Yeah. So they had some downtime. Yeah. and stuff like that. And I even offered to pay him and everything. And he was like, no, don't worry about it, man. You're good. He's like, I got you. And I was like, sick. That, like, you're the shit. And Maddie's like one of the best dudes out there. He's so cool.
That's
so
awesome. Yeah,
he helped out for the first few days until Eddie finished up his tour and could fly out and meet up with us.
When, I know you have guitar techs now, but when did you get your first guitar tech in your touring career?
Probably one of those Warped Tours, I think, with Chelsea Grin. Yeah, I did 2012 Warped Tour, Chelsea Grin, and 2014 with them as well. And I think probably that Warped Tour was like the first one. Because that was like our first like tour with in-ear setup, like guitar vault, guitar tech station, like all of that kind of stuff.
And what was it like going from, you know, I'm assuming teching yourself to having a guitar tech?
Incredible. I mean, it just alleviates so much like any like headspace. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
One of the worst things is to be like pissed off and in a negative headspace right before you go on stage, because of like, instead of like having like run out there and like frantically trying to fix something or troubleshoot something, like just be like one cable's bad or something like that. And it's like your rig's not working because of it. So instead of like me being the one up there, like sweating my ass off, frantically trying to fix it, I can just be side stage or backstage behind warming up, you know, focused on putting on a good performance and playing the show. So, I mean, granted, it's more expensive, obviously. And like, I didn't have that my first few years of touring, like by any means at all. It's a serious step up and it just makes everything a million times easier. And you're able, especially with the stuff that I'm playing now, like on my solo stuff, and the stuff with All That Remains, it's very nice to just be able to practice and just focus on playing and not have to worry about any of those technical aspects that could potentially happen literally seconds before going on stage.
I mean, and other than the obvious, you know, a good guitar tech is somebody who can clean your guitar, make your guitar sound good, and have all your equipment ready to go at the right time. Is there anything else that like you look for in a guitar tech when you're, you know, seeking one out? I know you have somebody you're probably with consistently now, but
yeah. Well, as you know, being on tour, everyone has to be cool. You can't have, can't have one bad egg in the bunch or else it just kind of ruins everything. Like, I mean, you're in close quarters with these dudes for like a month or two at a time. So like everyone has to be good, relatable, awesome person that can hang, that can hang. That's like so essential. Is just like not sucking as a human being and just being fun to be around for extended periods of time.
I'm just picturing someone on the phone with
someone
a tech.
You can just sit there in silence with and watch TV for like 2 hours, like shit like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, I love that. That's a good way to phrase it. I'm just picturing you getting on the phone with a potential tech and be like, yo, do you suck? What's going on? Like,
fortunately it's never been like that. It always just either a recommendation for someone. And then, or the way we found out about Eddie was like, actually, funny enough, I won't say the dude's name, but when I was in one of the first few US tours of All the Remains, we had a tech that just dipped.
He's gone?
No, seriously. Yeah, he just left without saying anything. Like, I don't know. He wasn't very good. There was a couple times where he would hand Mike and I, the other guitar player from All the Remains, our guitars, and we'd play like a G chord just like to check the tuning of it because we knew that it might not be in tune.
Oh, that's the worst.
That just he would literally hand us guitars. We'd play it. He'd be like, nope. Just give it right back to him and be like, what are you doing, man? Like, did you not tune this? Like,
that's
all?
Almost worse than having no guitar tech.
Yeah, for real. Cause I mean, I was literally to the point where I was like, bring me like the little headstock tuner, like just so I can double check it before I go out there. There was one day where something was going on with mine and he just like couldn't fix it. And then he hands it back to me and I have a floating bridge, which with like the whammy bar. So the bridge can go up and down. And you have to make sure the springs in the back, the tension is correct. So that way it actually sits level in its cavity that the bridge is in. So that way there's nothing else weird going on with the instrument. And he handed it to me one day and the bridge was like this, like in its cavity, just like coming up, like out of it. And I'm just like, dude, we're like 5 minutes past our start time. Like,
yeah.
What is happening right now?
What did you do for the whole day before this point?
Dude, exactly. Like, it's like, I just don't understand how the dude could have been blowing it that bad. But it just got to the point where everyone was just like constantly just like critiquing everything he was doing. We could tell he was miserable. Yeah. And then, he literally just dipped without saying anything. And then that's how we found Eddie. Anytime he can come with All the Remains, he does. And I like to always have him with me for any solo stuff if he's available as well. But he's worked his way up the food chain like super fast because he's so good.
Yeah.
So he like kills it like so hard at everything and is just like I was saying earlier, like fun to be around. he just his like you think he's doing stuff where one of his main gigs now is like that Omar Apollo guy, if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is. That's like one of his main gigs that he does now too. So he went from like getting paid like scraps, like in his first gig, which is sometimes that's what you got to do to get your foot in the door. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you just got to like eat it for a little bit. And then if you do a good job, word spreads just like it did. So he went from that to like, you know, making decent money with us all the way up to doing stuff like doing like the late night shows, like with Omar Apollo and shit like that. That was all within like a year or two.
I love hearing it from the artist because it's one thing to talk to a guitar tech and hear, you know, what you need to do and what makes a good guitar tech. But it's so much nicer to speak to somebody who's, I mean, you're kind of the boss. You're the proof of it. And it's nice to hear it come from you.
I don't like to think about it like that, but it's technically true.
Yeah. On paper. Yeah. I know like through your years of touring, you have the ego kind of goes out the door in a necessary level. So you don't think of yourself as above or below anybody. You're just all working together.
Yep. Everyone is essential.
Yeah. Agreed. What was it like going from being 1/6 of the band or 1/6 of the deciding power, or maybe not even at all, especially when you would just be kind of playing with somebody live, to when it's you and Luke touring, being, you know, half or even sometimes just the only person making decisions in some situations? How did that feel?
Stressful, but better at the same time, because it's like more control. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like if something does go wrong, it falls down on you. There's no one really else to blame. Just I guess like having more control of that aspect, like make kind of ensures that things will go more smoothly, I think, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. More weight,
more control, and just having more certainty that things are going to go how they need to, or just talking to the right people to navigate through whatever needs to happen.
So we talked about kind of what didn't work with these other artists, and now you found, you know, success within your solo career and you're working with Luke. What makes your partnership with Luke work so well, other than the fact that we know he's a really cool fucking dude?
Yeah. This is the stuff that we do together is like the outlet for us to just like go like ham, just insane. Like we can just literally like, I'm not writing for anyone or like just, we're just literally doing whatever we want and people dig it, fortunately. Like there's this, we're in the middle of filming a new music video for one of the songs off the new album right now. It's 4 days of filming. We did two last weekend. We're doing the next two this next weekend. Actually earlier today, I went, that's what I was doing, scouting a location for part of it with the DP, the director of photography for the video. Honestly, I saw a cut of just the very first, like the editor that's at the studio that's kind of like putting the whole thing together with me collaboratively. He already started cutting one of the scenes just to go ahead and get a head start on shit. And he sent it to me last night. I was like laughing. like it's just like so hysterically good. Like I'm honestly very intrigued to see people's reactions to this song and video. Cause it's going to be like we're pulling out a lot of favors to make it happen. Cause this is like, they do like actual movie stuff. So it's like, I'm saving like an insane amount of money. Fortunately through all these favors and them just being fans and just stoked to work on a project like this.
You're collaborating.
Yeah, exactly. Cause it's like typically they with the studio pretty much just only does post stuff. They're called Ethos. Yeah. They're a post-production studio out here in LA. They usually just do like editing, color grading and VFX type stuff. But we got put in touch through that G2 video, that esports team that Luke and I just did or helped do a song with. We didn't really write anything, but we re-recorded like the drums and the guitar and everything like that for real. And I put a solo in there, and technically, I guess I produced some of the guitar parts because they were like, yeah, just kind of like, if you feel like you want to try something out, just like do it and we'll use it if we think it works for the song.
You're so, like sick. Some of it
did get used. I wrote a couple riffs that I thought were really sick, but in the overall picture of the song and what it needed, it was a little bit too much, which is fine. Like I said, I was there to throw ideas out and see if they got used. But yeah, so I got put in touch with, his name's Brian, and he's an editor over at that studio. And oddly enough, right before I hit him up, they had been discussing internally about wanting to do music videos, more on their own, and metal in particular. So when I hit him up, when I got put in touch with them, it just like all of our ideas just seemed to be like the exact same fucking thing. We were originally going to do one video. Tina Guo, the cellist, plays like Hans Zimmer and stuff like that. She's also in that G2 song. She has a sound library, which is, do you know what that is?
I could guess based on the name, a library of sounds that she created that you can acquire maybe?
Yes. So it's essentially like you can play her cello. Like it's a virtual, it's like a virtual Tina Guo, essentially, from a company called CineSamples. So they like meticulously sampled her playing and her cello, and you can buy it and anyone can use it. So I use that on one of the new songs, like as like a main like motif in one of the songs. So we hit her up and to be in a music video. She said she was down, but then a lot of scheduling stuff was up in the air with that Hans Zimmer tour that's happening right now, but it ended up going through. So we had to like, you know, push that idea, like, you know, further down the pipeline. So for like, we won't be able to do any of that for like quite a few months now. So we had to shift lanes and I was like, fuck, I need two videos ready before I go on this 10-week All That Remains tour.
You manage yourself? Or do you have a manager?
I did have a manager. I don't right now. That's an entirely other
not meant to dig anything up. I'm just hearing you say all these things. I'm like, this dude does it all himself. This is amazing. Or currently, at least.
Yeah, currently for now, I don't.
Yeah,
I talked to a couple dudes about possibly new management, but I think for the time being, just because of all the shit that happened and I had to deal with, like, I just feel better like navigating it on my own and just reaching out to companies and other people I trust that I like assets wise, you know, like for merch pre-orders and disbursement and all of that kind of stuff. So with the music video, that crazy post-production studio, we had less than a month essentially before I left. I was like, well, shit, like, what if we just did this other idea instead? And this song is called, the name of it's literally Pumbaa Chew, which is a combination of Pumbaa and Pikachu.
I like that.
It goes for, yeah. So it sounds like anything from like, it starts with like this Lion King, like literally metal eight string song. Cause I was listening to Hans soundtrack, the new Lion King one a ton. And I was like, how can I incorporate this into something somehow, like my own version of it? And so I figured it out. I actually used, well, I didn't like actually record this myself.
Just pulls it up off screen.
I had another
sound. If you're not watching the video, watch it now.
I had another sound library and I used like one of these instruments for the intro. And then I was like, just to be an even bigger dick, I'm going to make this an eight string song on top of it. So it goes, it starts with like that. And then it goes into like this really pretty piano, like orchestral thing, which, you know, ends up getting like really heavy and stuff like that too. Then it goes into this smooth jazz, kind of like softcore porn noir type section, right into like one of the heaviest things I think I've ever written ever.
And this is your new song you're shooting the video for currently, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. I want to see this video. I'm excited.
It's dude. I literally was laughing when I saw the jazz section last night, like the very first edit of it, no direction, no input, no critiques yet from us. And I was, dude, it's hysterical how good it is. It literally looks like we filmed like silhouettes, like of like, you know, super hard lighting, like noir, like private agent or like a secret agent style type.
Yeah, I know
shit,
what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So like we literally like had like a super hard light on Luke and like they filmed like just his shadow on the wall. And like they like the attention to detail
artsy.
That they put that they're putting into this is insane. Like
when's it come out?
This one will hopefully be mid to late April. As long as the timeline sticks to what it is. Should be around there. We also have another single dropping before the end of this month too, which isn't announced yet.
And that's all in preparation. You're just trying to get it all done before you go on tour again.
Trying to get all these assets ready to go so that way we can stagger, you know, keep hype going and then get everything announced, pre-orders up and all of that kind of stuff within the next couple months.
It's amazing hearing about, you know, it's really easy from the outside looking in, especially if you're not in the music industry at all, to be like, oh, they're an artist, they go on tour, play a live show, they get home, maybe they do a photo shoot. But just hearing the logistical nightmares involved of with one video or one song, it's just such a full-time job and then some.
Dude, it's especially right now. Like I was saying before we started like literally going from like just like COVID vibes, like, you know, just like not really doing anything to all of a sudden, like just literally everything.
Turned up to 10, 11, 12.
Everything all at once. It'll be worth it once it's over. Like I honestly, like, especially after seeing that first clip last night, like this video is going to be like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, it's going to be hysterical. Like just seeing like, I'm so intrigued for like, I know the positive reactions are going to be like tenfold any negative ones, obviously, but like this song and video is going to trigger a lot of those like elitists, like for sure. It's going to be fun. It's, like, I can't wait to see some of like the novel comments that pop up. You know what I'm talking about, or like,
I know a little bit, but I also am learning how deep you are into your genre of music, especially when you, I forget the term you heard. Oh, you said like, I'm going to piss off a bunch of dickheads, or you said something. Mm-hmm. I forget what you said, but I was like, oh, there's a culture to what you do. There's a community. And I could tell just how you talk about it, that people care and are passionate.
there's going to be a lot, like the positivity always outweighs the negativity, always.
Thank God.
But I'm sure even with like with what in your field, like there's always like you notice the shitty ones more, unfortunately, because you're like you're seeing everyone just being stoked. You're like, yeah, like this is awesome. Like, I'm glad so many people see it. And then there's that one like just dickhead that just has to say something.
I just stop reading them. I just don't intake it. I'm just like, I know what I think of this, what you think. I could pretend.
I know what I'm getting into, but it's like, so that's why I always try to like make a point to like respond to like a good amount of the positive ones as well. Like at least just like, I'm already looking at it. So I might as well just, you know, like it. Like literally, like I'm just already reading it. It's just, I just press it. And then they're like, hell yeah, he saw it. Like that's sick. Cause I know how I feel when shit like that happens to me from someone that I look up to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's great. And I think something that goes hand in hand with that, that I was taught, that I always say, is I never give the negative people the microphone. Like I never entertain them, respond to them or anything, because I don't think they deserve the microphone. They didn't earn it. And especially with that attitude.
I try to control it, but sometimes some of them get under my skin just a little bit. I'm just like,
this, you give them the mic.
Like, yeah, I don't like, I try to be smart, clever about the response. Like not like, but sometimes there are a couple that get under my skin and I can't help myself. There are some though, where I type it out and then I delete it. That also feels good. Like, cause it's almost like getting it out, but then you like, you're like, I'm better than that. And then, so you just don't do it.
Hey, I respect that. I respect that a lot.
Yeah. But sometimes some slip through the cracks and I know they shouldn't, but it is what it is.
Hey man, we're just doing our best.
Yeah.
So I understand on multiple levels. I mean, speaking of partnerships, I actually had this memory that was a little bit cloudy, but I think I'm going to jog your memory. And I don't know if you remember when I toured with Lindsey Stirling and you hit me up regarding Lindsey. Do you remember this?
Yes. You made her follow and tweet me. And I remember I woke up and I was in my bunk. Actually, I think that day just scrolling through, cause I was just a huge fan then. I don't even think I had done any of my cover videos of her or anything like that yet. But yeah, we found that. I think you were with Of Mice on that tour. You were like hopping back and forth.
Yeah, I was definitely going around with people for a few weeks at a time. And I mentioned to her, I was like, hey, this guy, I know he's like an insane guitarist. Like, and I played her some Chelsea Grin or something. I was like, this is his music and he really likes your music. You should hit him up. It'd be really funny.
Yeah, I hope you showed her Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Cause that was like the song, the music video in the Salt Flats.
I don't remember. Oh, I do know that song.
That one is actually like, that doesn't sound like anything else in Chelsea Grin's category. And it's honestly probably, catalog.
But to the untrained ear, it kind of all sounds, you know what I mean? Like unless you're in it, sometimes it can all blend together unless you really understand it. So
yeah, I mean, it's got screaming pretty much the whole time in that song, but it's also the prettiest song the band has ever written. It's got this like giant chorus that actually has a melody to it with like an actual, like it's like practically a choir. There was like some production tricks, you know, used to like layer like multiple vocal tracks and stuff to get it to sound the way it did. But there is like a whole like melody line in there. And that song was actually written collaboratively, I think by like five or six different people by the time it was finished. Yeah. There was literally like, I think like Diego Farias, RIP, helped.
Diego was awesome.
Yeah.
What a homie. Right.
I think he did the breakdown pattern in that song actually, and maybe helped start the first like inception of like the clean guitar parts in there. And then I think it's obviously, you know, the Chelsea Grin dudes like Dan and AK like helped write it as well. I came into the picture and also helped write. I did like the orchestral stuff kind of like later towards the end and produced the guitar parts and just spiced things up. I think this dude named, I can't remember, his nickname's Bucket. Yeah, I think I can't remember his.
I don't know him, but I believe the nickname.
Yeah, I think his first name's like, I think it's Stetson, if I remember correctly. I haven't talked to him in quite a long time. We ended up not seeing eye to eye on stuff and just kind of stopped. Fell out of contact. But I think he wrote the melody line on the chorus, maybe him and AK together, the singer of Chelsea Grin at the time. They like made that chorus melody. And then, so yeah, there was a lot of heads on that song, which is why it came out as cool as it did.
All right. Well, let's assume that I showed that song to Lindsey. Yes. What? I mean, like I know you've done work with her since then. Are you guys friends now? And if at all, did she inspire you to do any of your solo career? Because I know it was before you did your solo career and she was doing her thing on YouTube at that time.
And it was so unique that it just like skyrocketed. Yeah, maybe, possibly. I didn't think about it like that, but you could be right. I did that one cover video of the arena and she definitely saw it, which is sick as fuck. And then she invited me, that had to have been, I think it was 2018. Cause I remember I still had my CRV at the time. I hadn't gotten my new car yet. So that had to have been like 2018 or something like that. She invited me to come play on like a Facebook live stream for like a, on her birthday for like a charity benefit fundraising
thing.
That's
so cool. Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the company. 2019. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the company, but it has to do with like saving girls or people from trafficking is what they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know it off the top of my head either, but I know she like something having to do with like sex trafficking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good nonprofit.
Yes, it is. They literally like, they, I think I'm like pissed at myself. I can't remember the name of the organization now, but it's, they literally like private detective, like go and find these people doing this shit and like take the girls and get them out of this stuff.
That's
get them
insane.
Out of it.
I think it's called End Human Trafficking, Operation Underground Railroad.
Yes, that's it. Okay. Yeah, that's it.
So I was doing Google research. Okay. Well, there's a nonprofit if you guys want to support it. That, you know, I didn't understand. I know this might sound ridiculous to some people. I didn't understand sex trafficking until I watched the Epstein documentary to kind of, I just didn't get it at all. And I knew it like on a very zoomed out view, but I didn't understand what it was like in practice. Like, you know, I've seen Taken or something and what that looks like, but that's a little bit dramatized.
Yeah.
And then I understood more when I watched the Epstein thing. I was like, this is absolutely insane.
Horrifying. Yeah.
It's insane.
It's insane. Yeah. That's a very solid adjective for that.
Just, yeah.
Mind-blowing stuff. I watched a few of those too, just out of curiosity, trying to get educated on his whole deal. And it's
unfathomable, man.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, well, props to you for playing a birthday party. And cool for Lindsay for reaching out to other artists and collaborating with them. I know, yeah, you know, like you said earlier, it's nice to see people work together, work with each other, not for or above or below. Everybody's just doing their thing together.
Yeah, another funny thing about that is she asked, because when she hit me up to do it, I think it was like 2 or 3 days before the actual stream. So yeah. I hadn't been, you know, playing that song. So yeah. I had to like relearn it like on the spot. And I hadn't been practicing guitar consistently either. Like, I mean, I always practice, but I'm not like sitting in here playing for like 3-4 hours every single day. So yeah. You kind of like your calluses start to fall out a little bit too if you're not consistently playing. And she also asked me to learn another song on acoustic to play with the singer-songwriter that was all on her that album too. Cara Faye, I think is her name.
Yeah. Shiny Toy Guns, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that Shiny Toy Guns band. Yep. So I learned that song. But fortunately, I had listened to it a million times just listening to the album. So it was just a matter of like ingraining the chord progressions in there. But I had a massive blood blister on my finger while we were playing like all of that stuff.
What's a blood blister? Is the blood blister exactly what it sounds like?
Yes, it's literally just a blister that's full of blood.
Oh,
so it's like this red, like bumpy dot on your finger. But I just hadn't been practicing as much as I should. So I had to. And acoustic is harder than electric if you haven't been playing, which I don't know if you've dabbled really in that, but it's like,
I can play one song on acoustic.
It destroys your fingers. The acoustic is way rougher on your hands than electric is, especially holding chords down. That's also more demanding than just like shredding sometimes, like for sure. Cause you just have to use like your entire finger and just press down and hold it instead of like consistently moving. It's just like a different like muscle. And it just,
yeah. Especially when you're doing it on the level you are doing it at. It's
I shouldn't let myself get out of practice ever, but sometimes you need a break. You know what I'm saying? It's just like with working out. Just like you need, every now and then you need like a reset, like heal and just like give yourself a break. Then you work your endurance back up later when you need it again.
Oh, the thing I wanted to ask you was, you've said a few times really casually, like then they got me, I would join their band and I had to learn all their songs. And then I had to do this thing and I had to practice for a few days. Musicians say that all the time. Like I'll have a drummer friend who joins a new band and he's got to learn all their songs. And to me, I'm like, they say it so casually, but what's that actually look like when you need to practice and learn a whole, like you've recently joined All That Remains. I know you played with them a little bit as a touring member before you were an actual member, but what was that like, the process of transitioning from doing just solo stuff to joining this band on a very technical level?
Well, fortunately for me, that's kind of a weird segue, but the unfortunate circumstances
I
joined the band, you know, Ollie died and they already had a new album coming out, tour lined up and all of that stuff. But he was an ultra guitar nerd, just like I am, like ultra fucking nerd, which is, that's an endearing compliment. Like I love that. He had everything transcribed. So,
and if you're not watching the video, Jason is currently holding up a transcription of with titled All That Remains.
Yeah,
so you just learned it from there?
For pretty much every album, there is a guitar book. So when it came time to learn everything, everything's already there. So it was just a matter of just, you know, just looking at it and just retaining it.
But you're also trained in order to read that. Like not every guitarist can read music like that, or maybe I'm wrong.
Tabs, yeah. Guitar, yeah. Staff notation on guitar is a whole different beast. It's actually, in my opinion, like borderline pointless, which I know I might get some hate from that. But the reason why I think it's not intuitive and tabs are way more efficient, unless you're sight reading or something like that, or a studio musician where that's like your shtick. That's like what you do is that. But the reason being is because on guitar, even on a six string guitar, you can play the same exact note in the same exact octave in like seven different places on the instrument, as opposed to where on piano, like if you want to play an E in a specific octave, it only exists in that one spot. That's okay. The only place you can play that note on a piano is that one key. But on the way the guitar works, literally the same note in like seven different places. So
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Is that why there's always these different holds you can do for the same guitar thing? Cause like, you know, I know enough guitar that I've tried to learn some songs. Yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to play the same note in like multiple. So this is why sheet music sucks for guitars, because how many places is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I lied.
You can do that. That's all the same note. What note were you playing?
I think that's this guitar is in C sharp. It's obviously a little out of tune because I was playing it a bunch last night. I haven't
no judgment yet. No judgment.
Literally like.
And what I'm hearing that sounds different isn't actually the note. It's just the length that it's kind of twanging. I don't know.
Depending on where, because the strings are, you know, all different sizes and stuff like that. Yeah. They have different like timbres or color to them, but it is all the same note in the same exact octave. It just depends on like how bright or dull you want it to be. That's the main thing. It's like,
okay, that makes sense.
Like, so that's like the open E string. It's going to be way brighter, but like as you work your way up the strings, they kind of get like duller because the string is thicker and the length is like, so that 24th fret on the low E.
Yeah.
Is the same note here.
Okay. That's wild.
Tune, but
I feel honored to us.
Different sound. So that's why sheet music on guitar sucks.
And I feel honored. I mean, it's one thing to talk to you for an hour. It's another thing to even see you play guitar and talk to you for 1 minute. Cause I'm like, this is the guy doing the thing he's best at. Like talking, we're both, you know, we're pretty well versed in it because of our industries. But seeing you play guitar, it's like, that's pretty cool.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Just the same
compliment
note.
Intended.
Just the one note.
Okay. So Ali made it easy on you. He thankfully transcribed. Mm-hmm. Is that the correct term? Transcribed?
Yes.
No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Transcribed all of the guitar parts for you for All That Remains. And then what, like you've been through these other projects, you've done your solo project. What was enticing, or what made you agree to go from a touring member of All That Remains to you're a member of the band now. You're in All That Remains. It was wild.
Which is weird to think about.
Deepest Gray, right? Is that their song?
Is
the Deepest Gray an All That Remains song?
That is an All That Remains song. That was off the album before The Fall of Ideals.
Oh God, I love that song. That's
from Dark and Heart.
Yeah, man. You're in the band now. We gotta start quizzing you on things. What let you kind of decide to, you know, not in a way go back to, but what was enticing about it?
We all just clicked. Like the first couple tours we did together, like we just all got along so well. I love the band. I grew up listening to them. You know, just like you did, like back then, like mid-2000s, like when Killswitch, As They Lay Dying, Shadows Fall, All That Remains, like all of that stuff, like Atreyu, Avenged Sevenfold, like that was all like around like the same era.
BT Bam. Yeah.
Yeah. Lamb of God, like all of that shit was like popping off right around the same time. I was just like being a huge fan of them back then. And they obviously, I mean, they needed someone that could, you know, play the stuff. It's not easy shoes to fill by any means, having to play all those solos and all of that shit. Like it's not easy stuff. Like that's why I'm very, very glad that Ollie was as much of a nerd as me and transcribed all of his music.
He made your life a little bit easier.
Yes. Yeah. No, there's some stuff after learning it. It was just like, I don't know how accurately I would have been able to pick all this out by ear if I didn't have like stems from the album or something like that, like isolated tracks of everything, which I did have to do for the newest album. Because unfortunately, you know, before he passed away, they didn't have time to make a book for that one. So I did have to get stems from the studio and figure a lot of that out by ear.
That's kind of cool. Was that kind of, I don't know, therapeutic or like some, is it too weird to say like, you're kind of taken over for him. And is that too, I don't know. To me, it's like, you're literally learning his guitar parts by hearing him as another guitarist that probably really appreciates his art. Like, I'm sure he would have appreciated that so much that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they all said. They literally all said that, like, he was a huge fan of mine. And if there's anyone that that he could have picked to take over after he was gone, I would have probably been one of the first ones, which is awesome to hear because he was my friend. Yeah. Like, I toured with them when I was in All Shall Perish and Born of Osiris, actually. Or maybe not toured, but at least played shows with both bands. So I knew most of them before I even joined, which is one of the reasons why they asked me to begin with.
Yeah. Well, what an honor. Congrats on joining their band. Obviously, we wish the circumstances weren't of which they are.
Got to make the best with what you're dealt with, unfortunately, with any scenario.
Agreed. And I think the last question I had about that was, do you find yourself, I mean, you say you get along with everybody. It's kind of crazy. They're all like, they got to be like 15 years older than you, right?
Yep.
You're just an old soul.
Yeah, I think the drummer, Jason, who's also Jason.
Oh, yeah, Jason Costa.
He's probably almost 50, I think.
Yeah, he's 49.
Yeah, most of the guys are in their 40s now, or they all are, I think. I think our new bass player, he might be late 30s, maybe.
Is that Matt Dice?
Yeah, he was in the band 38. Before Fall of Ideals. He was on the first two albums.
Okay. Wow, throwback.
Yeah, that song you were talking about, The Deepest Gray, I think that's him actually singing that part, the really high part.
Wow. I wanted to share, I don't have anybody I would share this story with, but I have a pretty funny story about Ollie that I thought was so funny that kind of goes hand in hand with
he was a character.
Real, like, and my interactions with him are limited, but I did do a photo shoot with him once in Wisconsin when I was like, had to be 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And it was for a cover of a magazine, and Ollie, through some I don't know how, ended up locking himself in the bathroom, which he didn't mean to. He just accidentally did that.
No,
and
he was like
freaking out. He was like, you guys, I need to get out of here. And me, like, relative to me, they're quite grown people. So I was like, why is there a man? And he was like, I'm going to call the fire truck. I'm going to call 911. We're like, we'll get you out, man. It's just, we'll get you out of the door. But he was stuck in the studio, and I'll never forget. I thought it was so funny, but he was so kind.
Nail on the head for him. That's perfect. Yeah. No, that's him to a T.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I mean, they've told me so many stories along those lines, or just like dumb shit like that would happen. Like I said, like, he's just a quirky, super fun, just like oddball. Like, dude was great. And that, what you just said, doesn't surprise me one bit.
I love, like, talking to you, talking to people like him. I love when people clearly have all of their, like, their stat points in one place, you know? He's so good at one thing, and that's okay, because we need people like you guys. We need people who are just really good at the thing to show us how good you can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you.
Well, man, thank you so much for joining me, and congrats on all your success, both personally and professionally, and it sounds like I'm really excited for this music video.
Dude, me too. Song. Especially after just seeing that one cut, like, it's going to be ridiculous. Like, I cannot wait to see the final product. Like, it's going to look like an insanely... Dude, I don't even want to think about, like, the amount of money I should be spending that I'm not. I wouldn't be surprised, like, if we were to actually tally up everything that should have been paid for, that's not like being like, you know, a favor or something, just because it's like a passion project for a lot of the people involved. Fortunately for me, like, I wouldn't be surprised if this would be like close to like a 50 or 60K like music video. Like, I'm not even kidding.
That's amazing. And it's probably more than you ever even think too, because VFX and stuff gets so expensive.
Dude. Yeah. Like, it's insane. Like, we were going to do, there's one section that, that's going to have a bunch of fire and shit like that in it.
As you must.
We investigated it, doing it real. Like, if you like, you know, getting permits,
pyrotech,
like, location, and just like the amount of moving pieces. And like, even like you have to tell the fire department, you have to find somewhere it's allowed. You need to hire someone that knows how to use the gear. All that stuff. Like, once it's said and done, like, even without any favors, like, being pulled out, it would have been five figures something just for that one scene. So we were just like, well, that's not going to happen. But
yeah,
then Brian found out that one of the dudes at the VFX studio that he works for was a fake VFX fire guy for like years. And then he showed me this reel, like a film reel of his VFX fire stuff. And I was like, that's all fake. And then like, you see like the overlay, like, scroll by of what the original footage is, like, before the fire. And I'm just like, holy fuck. Like,
cause it looks real.
Yeah. It's like, you cannot tell.
Oh man. That's amazing.
Literally at all. So I'm like, it's going to be insane.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And last question before you go on tour, shower shoes or no shower shoes? We ask everybody.
This is a problem. I usually don't. No problems yet.
I like that.
I know I should, but I don't think I ever have. And no problems.
It's okay. We're the same. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jason. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. Definitely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I'll catch you around in real life.
Yes. I think April 19th, we're playing at 1720. It's in LA.
Is that downtown?
I think it's like near Scary Row, so lock your car.
Dude, I've been to this venue. I saw the Scary Kid show there, like the reunion show. That area is wild.
The venue is good. The venue is nice. Everywhere else surrounding it is like horrifically sketchy. My girlfriend's car got broken into once there.
Yeah. Maybe we'll Uber. We'll Uber.
Yes. But we're playing Fall of Ideals front to back, which is the album that matters. So it's going to be a real fucking sick show.
All right. I'll let you know. I never want to be the like LA dude who's like, hey,
it's all good, dude.
Show?
It's LA. It's expected. I'm like already prepared to have to like put like 20 or 30 people on myself probably.
Oh, God. All right. We'll figure it out. All right. Thank you, man.